Why have I quit my job? Why have I, you know, bought a van? And why am I going to drive around the country? Well, I'm passionate about the idea that you need to be heard. And I want to stitch these stories together across the states. We're going to find the commonalities. And it's going to be really an amazing experience. And I look forward to you joining me on the job. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Mental Health Today. It's your host, Ken Stearns, and a beautiful day here, Thursday day Thursday, and I'm in Las Vegas. I'm on my journey with the jar, as you saw there, kind of putting the van together, pontificating what I may find as a common thread as I traveled across the U.S. and interviewed people on, you know, some human topics, and it was definitely mental health. I took a break in December, saw the depth and the breadth of the mental health crisis up close and personal, and it surprised me. I was not really aware at all. And so it took a little bit of a break and kind of took a step back and started the Jar Foundation, which sponsors this show, and really started the mental health podcast to learn more, to really get professionals, people in the space, people actually actively working on the crisis, to hear from them, to kind of lift up their companies. And they're also their personal stories. You know, almost everybody in the mental health space is there for some passionate reason that they've got kind of found themselves in the space. And, you know, Becky's got one waiting for us. Becky Lehman, our next guest from Timely Care, which is a really interesting company if you haven't heard of them. And the stuff and the where you're at is really on the front line and on the front line with the youth, which is really admirable, Becky. Must be a rewarding job rewarding in one way because you are making a lot of progress, but on the other side, frustrating because we're not doing enough fast enough, it seems. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. How did you, you know, I don't know if it's a really straight question or not, but how did you get to Timely Care or how did you get into the mental health space? I don't know if those are the same question or the same answer.
They're actually not, but it's all roads lead to mental health. So I think I have an interesting story. So I've always been somewhat connected to mental health. So I spent the majority of my career working in higher education, developing and building programs to further the education of adult learners. And one thing I was always interested in was retention. What makes a student retain or not retain? And in a previous life, the majority of the students didn't retain because life happened. It was not that they did not have the academic aptitude. It's just something happened in their life that caused them to stop out. And today, I mean, you talk about the mental health crisis and how it has been, you know, exacerbated over the years. Mental health is now the number one reason students drop out of college. So professionally speaking, I've always been curious as to the why and what could we do to help support students. Yeah. Personally speaking, I am my other number one job is I am the mom of a 16-year-old son, and we were personally impacted by a mental health crisis. So we live in a wonderful community where the kids all are running up and down the street and playing with each other, and the high school kids play with the middle school kids, play with the elementary school kids. And I came home from work one day and there were a bunch of kids in my driveway. And my driveway was the starting line for running races.
Okay.
And got to talk to all the kids. They were absolutely fantastic. They're all running races. I offered snacks, lemonade, drinks, you know, things like that. And had a great time. And I met a young lady there who had the brightest smile and was the most cheerful and kind person you could imagine. 2 days later, I go on a business trip and I'm in Michigan, currently live in Florida, and I get a call from my neighbor and he says, would you like me to pick the kids up from the bus? And I'm going to pick up the kids. I can go get your son. And I said, I figured it's Florida, it's raining. So I'm like, if you want to pick up my kid. Thanks. Just drop him off. You know, somebody will be there. And he goes, well, I plan on talking to my son. Would you like me to talk to your son? And it kind of stopped me in my track. And I was like,
Like,
what am I missing?
About what? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, he can walk home in the rain. It's okay. And he said, oh, I don't think you've heard, but this girl that was, you know, playing with the kids a couple days ago, she had died by suicide that morning.
Wow.
And it stops you in your tracks. And so that was, I mean, it impacts our community to this day. And my son and I talk a lot about it now that he's 16 and older. And we talk a lot about, you never know what somebody else is going through. And they could have the brightest smile on their face. And like, I can picture it, Ken, like it was yesterday.
Yeah, that's...
Beautiful girl, bright smile. She beat all the boys in the races. But you never know. You just never know.
Yeah. So tragic, right? Those are tragic moments. How did Timely Care get started? What was the kind of the genesis? Because you're seems you're a little bit different than you started. What's the journey? Yeah, what was that journey?
We started in 2017, offering healthcare services for students. When we started, the majority of our visits were medical. And so the way that our model works is we are very passionate about providing students with equitable access to care. So they don't need health insurance to access our services. They will not see a copay. So when we talk about what's causing stress and anxiety from students, there's nothing more, you know, stressful or causes more anxiety than going to see a provider that you need to talk to and saying, and here's your bill, right?
And here's the money.
Exactly. Our mission is truly to improve the health and well-being of college students by making virtual medical and mental health care accessible anytime and anywhere. Okay. And so through the pandemic, as you can imagine, all those medical visits that we were seeing are still there, but the amount of mental health students that we're seeing for stress, anxiety, depression, now that is the majority of students that we are supporting through our mental health channel.
You know, one of the things that sticking in my mind and how to get the data and how to articulate it is that the amount, and what you just talked about, the amount of medical situations people have that go untreated, unaddressed, and that turn into, mental health issues. Sorry, mental health issues that turn into physical ailments.
Absolutely.
And just why we can't get healthcare companies to further support mental health, you know, because it's in their best interest in the long term. It's going to stop people from coming and having heart attacks or strokes or other, you know, really big events that are essentially symptoms of mental health, untreated mental health.
Absolutely.
You think we'll ever be able to get the data on that?
I do. And I think when we're looking at we support higher education, we support college. Mm-hmm. So when we look at what it takes to enable a student to be well and thrive, they have to be both. They have to be physically healthy. They have to be mentally healthy, but they also have to be personally fulfilled, and they also have to have that sense of belonging. So that sense of belonging that they feel when they're at their college campuses and when they're away from home and navigating healthcare for the first time, to your point, can cause some of those, you know, those medical issues. It can cause I'm nauseous, I'm going to go take a test, and you know, I haven't had a great teacher in calculus in high school, and I have to take a college calculus test. It's the ability to provide like comprehensive care to students is really what's helping us move the needle on all of those topics.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think if you as soon as you start talking mental health, and as soon as you release those, if I've got that belonging and I have someone that's listening to me, man, I mean, I would physically feel better, you know, instantly. And like you said, you're not missing class. You don't have stomach ache. You're not going to miss class. You're going to go to class. You're going to take the test. You're going to be performing better. There's got to be a direct correlation between how people feel and how they perform. And I don't know how to monetize that in a dollar amount.
Well, I think when you're talking about mental health, any student that you help is, you know, is worth it. And
oh, for sure.
We support 2 million students, but you bring up an interesting point. So we have medical support, we have mental health care support, and there's a variety of ways students can get to that mental health care support. But through our surveys, and you talk about the data, we found that the number one way students choose to seek support is through their peers, through each other.
What?
Yes.
And is that different by age? Is that just college age? And is that also
the college students that we have supported, but we run the gamut from private to public to community colleges. And it's fascinating. And so when we look at why students are contacting us and why students seek seek appointments with a provider.
Okay.
It is the top three reasons are stress, anxiety, and depression. When we look at our peer community, so what students are talking about with each other. So our peer community is a community for students to safely and anonymously interact and receive some support from others. And the reason we did that is we wanted to provide an informal on-ramp to care. And we know that there are so many silent sufferers. Not every student is going to raise their hand and say, I'm ready to speak to a provider. Mm. And that's okay. We have different avenues of care. So students can choose to receive care in a way that's going to make an impact on them. So
I like that.
And the data is incredible. So like I mentioned that stress, anxiety, and depression are what they're seeing our providers for. When you look at peer community, they're talking about issues they're having with relationships. They're talking about academic stress. They're talking about financial insecurity. They're talking about that they want to be more confident in their future and their career choices. And so in offering those different types of access to care, we're really broadening the spectrum because we appreciate and we recognize and we've learned. We've learned so much from students that not every student is ready to see a provider.
I love that phrase, you know, the on-ramp to care, right? So, you know, that first thing is talking to a peer, getting some good feedback, getting a warm fuzzy, and then realizing I may, you know, at some point, maybe I am ready for a professional.
Absolutely. And we do monitor our peer community. We have intervened in crisis situations and that's really the point of our services is because it's a safe environment for students. And so by providing those multiple points of interaction, we're able to reach more students in a more impactful way. And today, college students today access healthcare differently than any other generation. they just do, right? They have technology at their fingertips and they're not comparing us to driving to a doctor's office, filling in the sign-in sheet, sitting in a chair for 15 minutes, talking to somebody. They're comparing us to what they're seeing on their experience with Amazon and Snapchat and everything they have at their fingertips.
Oh, goodness. I'm sorry, Becky. That's brutal. That's like, I would not want to.
You know what amazes? It amazes me that with as much social connection we have out there, we also know that that could be so isolating for students.
Strange, right?
Social media. So absolutely.
Well, we're in a very connected place, but you're also, you know, I think it's at those alone times, you know, when the noise is gone and it's the quiet and, you know, you've got to fill that space. And sometimes, you know, I think especially for young people, it's hard to kind of fill that space with the knowns and you don't have a lot, you know, there's a lot more in front of you than there is behind you.
Yes, most definitely. And
it's daunting.
And I mean, let's be honest, there's a healthcare provider shortage out there. I mean, over half the country is in a healthcare provider shortage area. Oh. And students need care outside of the 9 to 5. So
even on healthcare, it's that.
Yes. Yes. So, well, this is more for the mental health. We're a mental health provider shortage crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we work with institutions, we really act as an extension of their campus services. So we're working hand in hand with them. And 40% of our visits are seen after hours and on the weekends. So if you imagine a student who's prepping for a midterm or an exam and they're doing it at 9 p.m., they have a panic attack. And who do they call? They can reach out to us and talk to somebody in under 5 minutes. Wow. And we will help them. And so we are there really to be that student, somebody. I always tell my son, like, you don't have to talk to me, but I want you to talk to somebody. It could be a friend, yeah, teacher. I don't have to know about it. Just please, if you ever get to that, you know, where things are that bad, or even if they're not that bad, like, please talk to somebody. And yeah, he was the one that actually told me, he said, "Mom, for over 2 million students, you guys get to be that somebody, somebody." And I thought that was like, that was so insightful for somebody who's
for 16. Yeah. 16-year-old boys. Like, you know, you are that somebody, Mom.
Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
It is.
It's kind of a happy, proud mom moment, right?
Like, it is. It is. And so I kind of poke around with him a lot and I'm like, what's the why? Like, where's this coming from? Because we know it doesn't start in college. It starts well before college. And we talk about the need for students to be resilient, how to help them, give them the skills to overcome those challenges and seek help when needed. And it was a moment of self-reflection. I do a lot of self-reflection, Ken, when I realized that I have done everything I can to make sure my son is never in a situation that is so tough that, you know,
that he gets resilience,
that he learns resilience skills. So I'm like reflecting to myself. I'm like, I am potentially part of the problem, but it's almost like I've like conditioned myself, like, are you okay? What's happening? And we also talk a lot about, you know, transparency. So when, you know, these students are in high school, the world is so different than when I went to school. Like, if somebody doesn't submit an assignment, the parent knows. You can track the kids on the phone. You can, every time there's a photo of your kid, it's on Facebook somewhere. And it's like their privacy is gone in a lot of ways. And so
that innocence is gone.
Yeah. And all of these things are adding up. And to think that it's not going to take a toll by the time by the time they get in college. So we're already seeing students who have either gotten mental health support before or just need that extra help because they are away from home for the first time. Or we support so many community colleges students where either we are their only access to care, they're first generation, they need that additional assistance, and it's tough. So it's not just the 18 to 22-year-old. It's the 35-year-old with two jobs just trying to go to school to get a career.
God bless those people. Do you see a difference in access? Like, who's comfortable to use the care, you know, like between the community? Because those are two different sets of people, community college and a full on campus college, traditional school.
It's not that it's different. I mean, I would say that the reasons that they're coming to us are different. So first and foremost, we want to make sure that each student is comfortable seeking care. So we have to make sure that our providers reflect the demographics of the student population. So
for sure,
if we have over 50% of our providers identify as BIPOC, we have providers that, you know, have a variety of life experiences, gender identity, sexual orientation. So I think if you're a student, you want to find somebody that can reflect your lived experience and that you can relate to.
For sure. That's
so important, because so often how many times have you looked at the insurance thing and you're like, oh, here are the three people that I can see have the opportunity to choose from a provider network that best meets their needs. Mm-hmm. And we also do what we can to respond to the needs of students. And I love working with students because they will tell you exactly what they need, exactly what they need. Like we did a, you mentioned community college students. We did a survey where about 3/4 of the students said that their source of mental distress was actually due to a lack of access to basic needs, food insecurity, housing insecurity, transportation insecurity. So we built a service for them. We built it. We said, okay, so now if a student calls in and says they have anxiety because they have food insecurity, or they're trying to decide between paying their rent and going to taking their shift to pay rent or going to class, we can help them with their mental distress, but we can also transition them to our care coordination team, who will connect them with free or low cost resources directly in their local area. So it's kind of amazing that we can help solve the problem.
You can solve the problem as well. Yes. Not just you're not just listening.
Yes, we're not just treating the symptom. We are solving the problem. And that is one thing that I am, when I joined Timely Care, we have 3 founders, and they are so passionate about doing what's right for students. And for somebody like me, who comes from higher ed, to start in at Timely Care and to say to the founder, hey, I think we need to do this. And he said, run with it. Go. It's best for students. It's an incredible environment. And that's honestly why I think we've been so successful.
It is kind of strange when you have founders like that. The leadership can really, you got to be right place, right time. You got the right, everything is lined up for you. But you need leaders that'll take those kind of decisions to meet the chance, to meet the opportunity.
Absolutely.
And not be dilly-dallying or, oh, I don't know, let's run let's do a test or do that. But no, just go.
No. And
I love it.
Leaders who listen. And so we are consistently reaching out to students and campuses and evolving ourselves. I mean, the world evolves so quickly. Yes. We have to innovate and we have to evolve in order to meet the students where they need to be met and where they want to be met. Because if you think about like the way that we deliver healthcare, we are not a typical virtual care
experience. Yeah, you're not.
Nor do we want to be. And there was a student, her name is Jillian, and she is she's a wonderful student. She's a first generation community college student. And she's the daughter of an immigrant. And so she's fortunate enough to have a very close and supportive family, but they didn't necessarily know how to guide her through the college. And they didn't know, she didn't know how to spend her aid money. And she's been so open about her mental health struggles that she's faced. And she had to, unfortunately had to drop out a few months, but then return to school. And she returned to school with the help of her mentors and Timely Care. And she uses our peer community. And now she's coaching other students to help them be more successful. And that's the kind of success story that we love. And so talk about resilience. Jillian has got more resilience than I could ever hope to have.
I mean, immigrants and first generation, they got one shot, right? Yes. And that's the beautiful, this is their shot. And they're going to shoot their shot. So one thing I love it, it's a great thing about it. It's like, I'm here. I'm not whiffing the ball. I'm going to hit it out of the park.
Yes, no doubt.
You know, it's funny as you're talking about listening and I love the fact that it's not just the leadership team listening to the staff or the team, but as a foundational piece, it seems the company goes directly to its customers and does a lot of listening and the surveys and everything else. I mean, that's powerful. That's if you're led by your customer in some strange way, you still have to have vision, but you still need to be kind of, I guess the direction is modified or you can adjust it by what you're hearing from the customer.
Very
interesting.
It is. And it's interesting even more so when you factor in the different lived experiences of each student. they're not all look-alike profiles. They come from every walk of life. They've might not have ever had access to healthcare, or they might have grown up having wonderful access to healthcare their whole life. And we know that a student's racial or ethnic background or sexual orientation can be a barrier to accessing healthcare, considering mental health diagnoses, medication use, therapy that's lower among students of color relative to white students. Yeah. And that, you know, 33%, according to the Trevor Project, 33% of LGBTQIA plus students reported that they don't feel comfortable going to in-person mental health services on their campus. And so we take all of that into consideration. And so that's one of the benefits of virtual care, is it's very private to the student, and we respect that. So when you think of giving the student the ability to choose the provider that they could best relate to in a time that's convenient for them, like, that's what makes a difference.
That's hard. That's hard to do. That's a mouthful, what you just said. Because, I mean, to do, you know, based on my ex corporate life, if we go around talking like that, then, you know, holy cow, Becky, you got some stuff you have to deliver.
We do, but I have the easy part, you know, being the evangelist. Yeah, yeah. But the true heroes are our care team, where, I mean, mental health does not take a day off. Mental health does not take an hour off, and neither does our care team. And they're the ones truly on the front lines, assisting students from mild cases to very severe cases, to students who are ideating suicide. And to put that in perspective, it makes you think about things a little differently when you come to work, you know, every day.
That would make you electric. You know, everything matters.
Yes.
Everything's important.
Yeah.
What are you guys thinking about now? What's, you know, we talked a bit about this, the evolution you've gone through, and kind of responding to the market, responding to the crisis, both crises, you know, getting through COVID and then getting through the and then responding to the mental health crisis. What's the next evolution? What do you see now? Is it just now continue executing what you're doing, you know, keep going in this direction, or have you got some more ideas? What else is cooking?
I think it's the continued evolution. So we are looking at different ways to provide students with access points to that peer community. We are also launching and have launched self-care journeys. So what those are essentially self-help content where students can go through. We have yoga, we have meditation, we have check boxes and tips and tricks for students. And so our goal is really, again, to just provide the type of care to students in the way that they want to receive it. And we're also looking at how we can tie those, you know, those mental health improvement outcomes to student outcomes. That's so important.
I think if you start getting the data, again, this comes back to my, you know, 50%, I don't know, I'll make up a number, but 50% of medical costs that we spend in America are untreated mental health symptoms. You know, it's the outcome of a mental health case. Whatever the number is, even if it's 10%, and it's way more than 10%, even if it's 10%, it's a huge amount of money that we could be redirecting into mental health, as opposed to treating the outcome. So that data you're working on is very interesting to me.
Yeah. We have some great data points so far. So we know that our average mental health improvement score, is around 75%. Which is incredible. And it's, when we talk about the student experience, we're also looking at the way that they're rating us on the App Store, because they have to enjoy their experience. they rate us on
the brutality.
Right. So we want to make sure that they are comfortable with their experience. So, and that's really, you know, our product team is incredible in just building that engaging student experience that they want to use our services. But then we also measure the quality of care that they're receiving from the provider, their mental health improvement score, And we're also starting to look at data that shows that students are telling us that, as you know, with the help of timely care, we're helping them stay in school, retain in classes, and graduate. And so really we're able to support the students across their whole life cycle. And it always brings me back to our vision of, we want to enable students to be well and thrive in all aspects of their lives. And
that's a great slogan.
Yeah. And so great having mission. The data behind that, really, you know, that's really where we're focused. We're also looking at, like I mentioned earlier, what are they talking about in peer community versus what mm-hmm. they're experiencing in the self-care journeys versus what they're talking to the providers about. So it's not just about students seeing a provider. It's about that holistic student support that they can access anytime, anywhere, and where they will not incur a charge for it, which
it's kind of interesting that blending of the places that they can go mm-hmm. and to see what they're searching for in this area, what they're getting help for here from the peers, where they're going professionally, but you're really sitting on a treasure trove of data.
We're gonna break the stigma. I'm so confident we are going to break that stigma, break the barriers down completely for students. And so I think back to what Beautiful. Happened in our neighborhood, and it's like the what if she had somebody to call? What if she had somebody to talk to? And that's what keeps me going every day, because I know in 2 years my son's going to be in college, and I want him to have somebody that he can talk to.
I love that.
And honestly, it's a privilege to support students when they are at their most vulnerable. These are students with families and goals and dreams and challenges. And we are intentionally aware that the decisions we make affect the lives of 2 million students and their families. So you're right.
It is such
a cool place to be.
That's like electric when you put it like that. There's 2 million kids running around, you know, depending upon us. The one of the things when I started the JAR Foundation and I started looking at the crisis, you know, one was the stigma. And I thought, this is really a commercial show, so it's not really affecting the stigma as much. But the JAR, you know, the JAR allows people to tell their stories. I have another podcast, Traveling Show, and that one definitely addresses the stigma. And, you know, and I think the one that I'm passionate about as well is our tools. I think we've got this incredible, you know, probably with the most complex machine on the planet. Even this day, we don't understand how it works. You know, it's not even fully formed until we're 30 years. You know, you're literally a third of your life is over before your brain's even fully formed. Right. You know, this is crazy. And we have absolutely zero training on how to operate the operational system, right? Mm-hmm. We know how to do iOS, we know how to do Windows, but There's no tool set. There's no code for how to talk.
Yeah.
Right. How to self-talk, how to do all these things that your brain is powerful enough to do to help, you know, do a lot of self-help. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before you need a peer or, you know, in addition to a peer or a professional, you need those tools on how to have a good conversation with yourself. And I was lucky. I had a lot of sales experience, salesperson. So I had a lot of that kind of motivational, that tenacity, right, you know, was built in over time, but it was also done with a lot of support. I mean, I listened to a lot of cassettes back in the day. I flipped a lot of cassettes in my car of motivational speakers and people talking about your mind and, you know, just believing. And I thought that for my life and career was extremely powerful and valuable. And I think, you know, that's something should be taught in the schools, this kind of the power of your mind and how to talk, self-talk, just even self-talk is a great conversation.
That's a fantastic point. And to your earlier point, there is no instruction manual. And I think one of the reasons for that is because it looks different for everybody. But when you can, when you can help students or anybody in general, really create their own path in the way that's meaningful to them through a solution that delivers the speed and really the freedom of choice that they come to expect in their everyday lives.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to say that there's one playbook. There's just so much out there.
Yeah.
So yeah. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Just somehow how to do it. Becky, it's awesome conversation. Really, I'm a fan. You can count me as a fan for Timely Care. I love what you're doing, the branding, the look, the feel, everything. When I go to the page, the posts, the data you're sharing, looks really good. I think you guys can have a real impact. All right, you're having a real impact. I think it can be even more.
Thank you. That means a great deal to us. We strive to get better every day for our students.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a keen eye, you know, I look over and I'm like, wow, I'm super impressed. It's I think you're onto something. And I want to thank you for coming on the show and being a guest and kind of contributing to the little quilt, the little mental health quilt we're building over here on what kind of resources are available for people.
Yeah. It's a great podcast. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks. And thanks again. And thanks everybody for listening, supporting Mental Health Today. If I'm catching this episode on an audio version on iTunes or Spotify or something, please do go down below and give some comments, give us a rating, and then share the episode with somebody you think that may enjoy it. Becky, thanks again so much. I'll see you in 30 seconds.
Thank you.
Yeah, loose, baby.
But we're about to go and make this vessel with these great professionals in public glass. We're not part of the community, but we're from the outer family of glass blowing. Yeah, we're going to go make a magical giant jar with optic lenses so that if you turn it, it changes all the time. So if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change.